This is the Oanda Podcast.
You're listening to the Oanda Market Insights Podcast, talking to Oanda senior market analysts across the world. And today we're joined by Ed Moyer, who is in New York. Good afternoon from London, Ed. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Great to be with air condition and wrapping up another busy week.
Yeah, it's something that we don't have enough of in this country, air conditioning. The beginning of this week, we hit, you probably read it in your papers or on your media, we hit record temperatures. We had the highest temperature in the UK since the dinosaurs, really, if you believe that. Let's talk first about interest rates, because it was a big week in terms of the European Central Bank, which brought an end to the era of negative rates in the Eurozone with a bigger than expected half point hike. We heard from ECB President Christine Lagarde. She's warned of a darkening economic outlook. And this was a surprise to some markets, wasn't it? Because many had suggested that the rates would rise by 25 basis points rather than double that.
Very much so. And I think a lot of traders paid close attention to all the events of that day. And before the policymakers made that decision, there was that argument that they should with a quarter basis point increase. But I think, the inflation outlook definitely warranted it. And I think a lot of traders, though, were surprised that it took 8 years for us to get out of negative rates. But I think you have to acknowledge that Christine Lagarde's assessment of the economy is spot on. Every data point seems to be deteriorating fairly quickly. And when we take a look at, some of the morning data, we saw, contraction territory, manufacturing activity is plunging here. And I think given the energy crisis that will likely persist throughout the winter, this is just a very difficult environment for policymakers. And I think the expectations are that we won't see substantial tightening from the ECB as we're seeing not just the European economy, but a lot of their major trading partners are weakening fairly quickly.
Indeed. And they didn't have much option, did they, really, with the euro being so weak against the dollar, prices rising steeply. But we should remind listeners, rates are still at 0%, which historically is still incredibly low. But as you said, there is going to be some reluctance going forward to increase those rates too much with the threat of recession lurking around the corner.
I think right now you're seeing a rapid deterioration in the data, and this is why money markets are now becoming less convinced that the ECB will be able to keep up this tightening pace. And I think you're probably going to see that you're looking at maybe one more decent rate hike, and then I think the data will tell the rest.
So you actually think the ECB will remain reluctant to raise rates? Why are we here in the UK, and of course where you are in the US, talking about massive rate rises compared with the ECB?
Well, when you take a look at how our economies have been performing, and more importantly, how quickly central banks decided to react to inflationary pressures, you're seeing that the path by the Fed is for rate hikes throughout the rest of the year. And that's because the economy is on sound footing. The UK economy has been well positioned, and I think their central bank is being credited for being faster than many in fighting inflation. And you're probably going to see that. I think the unbalanced, or more so the southern periphery is really providing some trouble here. And I think that's why the ECB policy decision and the focus on fragmentation. This is really going to hamper how the central bank is going to be able to dictate policy. And I think right now you're probably going to see that the focus over these next few months is going to be what happens in Italy and how quickly do we need to see that new emergency tool be used to support that part of the Eurozone.
Interesting how you think the UK and the Bank of England acted quickly, because some have been suggesting that they haven't. This has been one of the considerations in the Conservative leadership campaign for the new Prime Minister. Some have been critical of the Bank of England for not raising rates earlier than they did. But let's move on to a different central bank, the Bank of Japan, and also South Africa. What's happening there?
Well, right now, I think all the central banks, you know, they were given a difficult task. I mean, we saw an unprecedented amount of monetary and fiscal support. So I mean, it's always easy to hindsight to say, oh, they should have done more. And I mean, yes, you know, the argument for, you know, each central bank to have acted earlier is easy and is made pretty much across the board. And I think what you're going to see, though, is for the Bank of Japan, they're just not they're not tightening anytime soon. Their policy is pretty much etched in stone. And I think what you're going to see is that, you know, Japan is leaving a weak yen that is really going to be troubling for their economy. And right now, you know, currency controls, there, you know, the BOJ has, you know, been very, their job's been complicated because you just had, you know, such a strong dollar. I think what's really difficult is when you have global economic weakness, you know, it's also provided you know, strong safe haven flows for the yen. So I think, you know, their policy is handicapped and it has a limited reach. But I think right now you're going to see that the BOJ, you know, they may be ahead of the curve by standing pat on rates. And right now you're probably going to see that, you know, investors are going to be a little bit more skeptical here as far as, you know, how the global growth picture unfolds. But right now, I think there's a good argument to be made that you're probably going to see central banks dial down that hawkish rhetoric as you know, a lot of these data points are showing a much faster deterioration here.
And South Africa, that was also quite an important moment, wasn't it?
The biggest interest rate rise in nearly 20 years. And I think it shows you that that central bank is focused on tackling inflation. And right now, you know, we've seen a steady stream of larger than expected rate hikes from the ECB, the South African Central Bank. And right now, I think you're seeing there's this scramble. I think it's important that when we look at emerging markets, they are trying to get in front of, you know, what seems to be a fear that, you know, these global recession calls are just going to intensify, and that's going to lead to further dollar strength. So you're seeing much more aggressive, I think, stances by these central banks. And I think with South Africa, you know, their economy has been really impacted by you know, the significant rise with global prices. So I think that this is really going to kind of lead to more expectations that you're going to see more central banks become more aggressive over this next round of, you know, central bank decisions. But that might be it. I mean, we might be seeing peak tightening, you know, this summer. And then I think you'll probably see much more less aggressive rate hikes. You know, this month alone, you saw in Nigeria, Pakistan, Romania, Hungary, just all deliver fairly substantial rate hikes. And I think this aggressive pace of tightening is probably going to wind down soon.
Okay, let's talk energy. Of course, this is crucial when we talk about inflation and interest rates. And there was some good news of sorts, Russia resuming gas supplies via Nord Stream 1, which had been shut down for repairs for 10 days. Some had feared it wouldn't come back online after the outage, but that was some respite, wasn't it? How was that reflected in the markets, if at all?
I think what's also important to know is that this does not mean we can say over the short term that gas supply fears are over. You know, even President Putin said that might need more maintenance on July 26th. So we're just days away from that. I think what you're going to see is, you know, the energy outlook is really what is crippling to a lot of people's forecasts for European growth. I think that, you know, this was a major risk event. It was possible, you know, for a lot of traders, this was the main one for the week. The risk of gas flowing through that pipeline was a big one, but I think you're going to see that, you know, the as this war in Ukraine drags on, you're going to see that the pressure on energy prices is going to remain elevated. Gas is vital. You're seeing more efforts. You know, the scramble to find alternative sources is growing, and I think that it just that type of uncertainty for Europe is why you're seeing such downbeat growth forecasts for the rest of the year.
Elon Musk has made a few headlines, hasn't he, over the last couple of weeks. We had him pulling out of the Twitter deal. And then this week, Tesla has sold a large proportion of its cryptocurrency holdings. And that's a big blow, isn't it, for Bitcoin? Tesla selling $936 million worth of the currency. It was worth double that at the end of 2021.
And I think when you consider not too long ago, we saw the diamond tweet hands for Tesla. So that implies that they were not going to sell anytime soon and they're going to hold forever. And that's obviously not what happened. When you consider Tesla's decision to do it, I think for as much as, you know, people criticize Elon Musk, I think that in the end, it's going to be respected that call. I mean, they took about roughly $157 million loss on that portion of that Tesla, that Bitcoin investment for Tesla. I think what you're probably going to see is, you know, investors are starting to doubt, you know, is exactly, you know, who are the main hodlers for Bitcoin, and that. Is why, you know, I think pessimism still remains fairly elevated. I think when you take a look at price action on the charts for Bitcoin, the headlines we've seen over the past, you know, week, I think though there should be something said that, you know, Bitcoin is starting to stabilize here. I think the expectations that we were going to retest the lows was the consensus call. That's not happening. You know, Bitcoin, you know, I think most people would say, given the Tesla headline, given the global recessionary fears strain that, you know, is putting on risky assets, and that still the consensus call on Wall Street is that we're going to retest those lows. So, you know, this whatever rally we saw, S&P tentatively touching 4,000, that was, you know, bear market rally commentary, you know, across the board. So this is such a negative environment for crypto, but Bitcoin is above 23,000. I think the key level for a lot of traders, they were thinking 14,000 was imminent. That did not happen. So as selling pressure, you know, is exhausted, there's, you know, I mean, like, sometimes, you know, markets, when you have so much pessimism, when you have no fresh money coming in, it's difficult to make a bull case. But, you know, the price action is supportive. You know, we had a key crypto conference by Bloomberg, which provided some optimism. I think right now this is an interesting time for crypto. I think that if it doesn't break, you know, there is still a lot of money on the sidelines, and that could prove, you know, to be, you know, rather supportive here. I think if Bitcoin is somehow able to recapture the 25,000 level, you'll probably see a lot of that money that drove it down is going to become constructive here. I think that this is an interesting time for risky assets, crypto, which was the one that got beaten up the most, could actually perform somewhat well here.
Okay, Ed, very interesting stuff. Let's look to the week ahead. What should we watch out for over the next 7 days or so?
Next week, I think for most traders, the main event is the Fed. That happens on Wednesday. They're expected to raise rates by 75 basis points. But this is going to be an interesting call. There are some economists expecting only a half point rate increase. And there's also a couple that are still saying they need to get in as much rate hikes as possible. And they're still calling for that full point. So normally with rate decisions, especially of this magnitude, you typically see some two main scenarios, you know, either 50 or 75. But in this one, it's 50, 75, or 100 basis points in rate increases. So that's going to be the main event. And then, you know, right after the Fed on Thursday, we get that first look of GDP for the U.S. Second quarter is expected to remain in not. Let me correct myself. Second quarter is expected to be a positive one, you know, which would be an improvement of that negative 1.6% reading we saw in the first quarter. So I think there's around the 0.9% growth anticipated. Some are calling for that technical recession. The Atlanta Fed GDP reading was also eyeing that as well. This is going to be an interesting one. If we see that technical recession, that changes what we'll probably hear from the White House as far as effects or policies that will be coming down the pipeline. But I think that is going to be a key one to pay close attention to. There's a handful of other key events. Monday, you have the German IFO business climate report. There's also a very busy earnings season week. This is the busiest one. Tuesday, we have Alphabet, GM, GE, UPS, 3M reporting. You also have the IMF will provide their latest world economic outlook update. On Tuesday also you have the EU energy ministers will have that emergency meeting. So very, very busy, the first half of the week. Thursday, it's all about your Eurozone economic confidence, consumer confidence, German CPIs. Thursday also, we have the two FANG stocks that everyone will want to pay close attention to after the close, Apple and Amazon report. And then Friday, U.S. consumer sentiment from the University of Michigan. We'll also get some consumer income numbers as well. So it's a busy week, and I think that we'll probably see a lot of traders are looking to see, do we see this little bit of stabilization in equities quickly get faded next week? And that will be the focal point for many.
Okay, Ed, have a very good weekend, and we look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Thanks, Johnny. Have a good one.
This is the Oanda Podcast.